You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Ticklish Business, the podcast devoted to honoring and deconstructing the world of classic cinema. As always, I'm your host, Kristen Lopez. Happy Halloween to everybody who is a Ticklish Business subscriber and follower. And in this week's episode, we actually have a twofer for you, technically. In this episode, you're going to hear Samantha Ellis and I list our top three favorite Twilight Zone episodes, but be sure to give a listen to our bonus episode that we also have available for you to listen to as we discuss the 1983 attempt to make a Twilight Zone movie. You are welcome to listen to that at your leisure if you want to get a more all-encompassing view of our love for the Twilight Zone, so definitely get that into your Spotify or however you're listening to the show. And also, because I'm trying to get these episodes out a little quicker and also make things a bit easier on me, I'm going to be putting the pre-scripted intros on hiatus for a while. If you really, really miss them, I might consider bringing them back once things settle down. But for now, I'm just gonna have some cavalier talk with you in the intros and then just get right into the main discussion. So hopefully you enjoy listening to this first episode of Ticklish Business 2.0, I guess, as Samantha Ellis and I list our top three favorite episodes of The Twilight Zone. Well, Ticklish Business listeners, we decided to try something different for our Halloween episode. We've done Universal Monsters, we've done haunted house films, we've done foreign horror. Why not try some television? It's not commonly what we do on the podcast, but I'm going to pull rank and say it's my show, so I'm going to do it. Samantha and I are back to talk about The Twilight Zone. We're going to be talking about our top three favorite Twilight Zone episodes. If you didn't already hear it, I'm joined again by the lovely Ticklish Business co-host, Samantha Ellis. Samantha, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Happy to be here.
It is great to be talking about The Twilight Zone. We're going to be talking about our top three favorite episodes. Samantha, what's your background with The Twilight Zone before we recorded this episode?
Honestly, it's been a bit of a recent love for me. It started off as my sister showing me an episode. I can't even remember why, but it was probably maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And I was already getting into classic film at that time, and it just seemed like a transition that made sense because so many iconic stars were guest stars on this show and gave incredible performances just like they did in film. It just made sense. Honestly, Rod Serling has so many ideals that he put on paper and on screen in these episodes that I agreed with and was totally on board with. And it turned into me collecting Twilight Zone autographs and watching all the episodes. And it's become a fascination for me. It's undoubtedly one of, if not my favorite, classic TV shows.
I discovered The Twilight Zone backward. So I saw the 1983 movie first, which, bonus for everybody, we're going to talk about the movie on a separate bonus episode. This is not going to be a Patreon exclusive. It's going to be something for everybody to listen to. So if you don't want to hear about the 1983 movie because it's too modern or whatnot, you thankfully don't have to listen to it, although we recommend it for a nice full Twilight Zone compendium. And that's where I came into The Twilight Zone. I saw this movie. I can't tell you how I saw this movie or at what age. I know that it had a profound effect on me and terrified me. When I eventually found out what it was, I decided, well, maybe I should watch the show. The show and the movie are very different, but they're both really unique concepts. And I think the Twilight Zone for the series, it's amazing to know that Rod Serling created a show that was talking about so many different things in the late 50s, early 60s, whether it was space exploration before we went to the moon, people going to different planets, going to the moon, space colonization, all this stuff. He was talking about nuclear war and the fear of communism that were not being discussed in a television show, let alone in a supernatural type of sci-fi series like this. I know a lot of people fall into two categories. You're either a Twilight Zone person or an Outer Limits person. Outer Limits is the redhead stepchild in the sense that it came out before this, and a lot of people say Twilight Zone has essentially killed it. I've watched The Outer Limits, and I like it. I think that the episodes are far too long, and the Twilight Zone dabbled with doing hour episodes, and it was a big failure. You can't do hour episodes for stuff like this. It needs to be like nice 20, 25, 30-minute show. I love this. I make fun of the show a lot every now and then because of just how hilarious it is to see Rod Serling in certain situations, just standing next to these people, introducing it. I always want the characters to be like, wait, who is this guy? Why is he in our house? The show is a lot smarter than it's often given credit for. It's great that we get to talk about our three favorite episodes. We could have done a whole five, but that would be an incredibly long episode because there's so many great, great ones.
I could have kept going for sure. I found it pretty difficult to find three that I loved that weren't too similar to each other. There were actually a couple of episodes that I purposely left out because they were just too similar, even though I love them.
So we're going to do round robin. We're going to do threes, then twos, then ones. And Samantha, I'm going to let you start. What is your number three?
Well, my number three is season one, episode 36, called A World of His Own. Keenan Wynn, he plays Gregory West, who is a playwright, and he's found that he can materialize any character or thing that he can think of and describe in detail into his tape recorder, which is actually how Rod Serling would record his episodes. He would dictate, but beside his pool at his home, his thoughts instead of putting them on paper, and that's what eventually turned into these Twilight Zone episodes. So I find it really interesting that he essentially did sort of a caricature of himself.
It's a meta type of thing.
He can materialize any character that he can think of and describe in detail into this tape recorder, including what we find out is his wife and his mistress. And then when he's finished, he can burn the tape and make it vanish into thin air, make whatever he creates vanish. And I think what really drew me to it in the first place is that it's a really creative premise that's really interesting and fun to think about, especially as a writer. You know, you think about what would I make? What would I create? How would that affect my life? And then the other thing that really sold this episode for me is Keenan Wynn's performance. I've always thought that he's ridiculously underrated. The son of Ed Wynn, who is most famous as the voice of the Mad Hatter in Alice in Wonderland, but he also starred in two Twilight Zone episodes, two of the more critically acclaimed ones, though Keenan himself never really grasped any high level of fame, despite being a part of tons of successful films. He was always the second banana to other stars throughout the 40s and 50s.
I love that you picked more esoteric ones, some of the smaller episodes, because I had to decide between a lot of the bigger episodes that I think most people would have picked. I love when sci-fi does their Twilight Zone marathon, even though I have all the series on a DVD set. I love watching certain episodes because I think I have not seen all of them, and that's when I don't believe I've seen.
I'm a purist and I'm a completionist where I start with season one, episode one. That wasn't the very first one that I was shown. My first episode that my sister showed me was Judgment Night with Nehemiah Persoff. It was very, very tempting to add it into my list because he just gives an incredible performance. I just couldn't because there are some of these episodes that just the plot and the acting and the execution I just really adore. And this would be one of them. This one was a last minute addition. like it really adds a bit of variety. And it's just such an interesting comedic episode that was rare for the series.
It's going to be great to do honorable mentions because there are so many episodes in each season that I really wanted to talk about.
There are so many.
There are so many. And so for my three, I could have easily picked at least 15 episodes. And I was just looking through all of the list here. And I'm sure somebody's going to say, you don't have this one. You don't have this one. All of them could have been three. My one and my two were very easy for me to decide. Three was hard. And I wanted to go with something that was not, and I use the term well-known. It's well-known to most people, but I wanted to go with something that was not a big one. It's a Good Life, something like that. So I went with season three, episode 16, Nothing in the Dark. My mother, who is listening, is rolling her eyes right now because she's going to say, of course you picked that one. This is the one with Robert Redford. I love Robert Redford, especially young Robert Redford. He's amazing. This is an episode written by George Clayton Johnson, who is a regular, directed by Lamont Johnson. It's the story of an old woman, played by Gladys Cooper, is living in this basement apartment of a tenement that has been abandoned, and she won't let anybody into the house because she believes that Mr. Death is coming for her in the guise of somebody. He's a different face every time. She witnesses a fight outside with a young police officer named Harold Belden, who is shot and is outside her front door. He says he's dying and he wants her to help him, but she won't because she believes that he is Death. And she eventually decides to take pity on him, goes outside, realizes she hasn't died. And so she takes him into her house and they have this discussion about how she feels that the building is going to be gone. One day she's going to be gone. It eventually dawns on her that Harold is in fact Death. At the end of the episode, he convinces her that there's nothing to fear. And she decides to give herself over to Death and realizes that nothing has changed, and it's just a different state of being, and it ends very happy. I'm a fan of a lot of the episodes that, and this is going to be morbid, that the Twilight Zone did about death. Rod Serling has a very interesting view of the afterlife. I love afterlife stories because Hollywood is one of the few places where you could talk about what the afterlife looks like, and this is secular for the most part, but I like that it's this concept of just a transition into something, some different state of consciousness or what have you. Of course, Robert Redford being Death, oh, I would take his hand any day, okay? He could just, I would go. Of course I would. What makes Robert Redford's performance so good in that is that obviously he's unassuming, but he reminds her that what you thought would come as, I forget what he says, is something terrible is more like a whisper. It's just a beautiful story in a series that did a lot of really beautiful, positive stories about death and dying. There were a couple morbid ones. This one, I think, is a really good one. I like this one.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's a fantastic choice. The thing that I love the most about that episode is that it really teaches a lesson that is so uncommon, that death isn't something to be afraid of. Horror is an entire genre that tries to teach you that death and killers and everything is so scary. Think of hell and you think of the afterlife as this terrible thing, or something that at least could be terrible if you do anything bad in your life. We don't really see a whole lot of Gladys Cooper's backstory. We don't really see whether she was a good or a bad person, just a fearful person. But no matter what, she still passes into the afterlife as gently as possible. I mean, you have young Robert Redford quietly easing you into another life, which, like you said, I couldn't ask for anything better than that.
I will be very put out if Death ends up not looking like 1960s Robert Redford. It's going to be very upsetting for me. Samantha, what's your number two?
My number two is season 3, episode 19. It's called The Hunt. I think this is another one that's out of left field. It's a story of Hyder Simpson. He's a very simple backwoods man. All you really know about him is that he loves his hound dog Rip and he loves coon hunting. And he goes on a midnight coon hunt with Rip. They're both outsmarted by this raccoon that they're chasing and end up drowning in a creek. Hyder wakes up the next morning to find his grieving wife and a funeral taking place for him and his dog. And the two of them follow this funeral procession until they reach a gate. It may be the key to the afterlife, but he finds out that everything isn't as it seems. I won't spoil it, but this is the first, and as far as I can remember, the only episode to genuinely make me cry. When he refuses to enter what he thinks is the gate to heaven because any heaven that's too good for Rip is too good for me. It's just the sweetest and purest relationship between a man and his dog that so many people can relate to. I wouldn't know what I'd do without my dog. And the twist at the end is so fascinating to watch.
The Hunt almost made my list. I'm so glad you included it. It was one of many of the number threes I could have put. And again, I love what the series does when talking about the afterlife, because I don't know any movie or source that would have factored in animals into your concept of the afterlife, especially in the early 60s. The concept of hell being this horrible place where you can't bring your animals is just so inventive. It's why we have a whole website devoted to whether the dog dies in a movie, because we feel so strongly about pets. So I love that it even bothered to think of that.
When you read about religion, so many religions are like, no, we have a separate heaven for dogs, or pets can't go to heaven at all. It's unfair. If you have a deep connection with your pet or with an animal, it's just not something you want to think about. And I'm glad that this episode, I don't want to say solves that mystery, but gives you another point of view. And a lot of other people dislike this episode. I saw a lot of very bad reviews when I was doing my research on it, but it definitely holds a special place in my heart.
My number two is one of the more landmark episodes. It is The Eye of the Beholder. It's also was titled The Private World of Darkness when it was rebroadcast in 62 because of conflict with person who was selling, I believe it was educational films. It was a guy named Stuart Reynolds, who was a television producer. He was selling educational films with the same name. And so CBS, rather than have to deal with that, decided to rename it. But they had issues after the fact. The original DVD was marketed as an alternate version. And I believe that there is, essentially, it's still called Eye of the Beholder, even in reruns. I haven't noticed it lately when they replay it, but now I'm going to keep an eye out.
I've never heard another name for it at all. That's the first
time. It's the first time I had ever heard of that. This is one of the early episodes from season two. It's episode six. This was actually written by Rod Serling, and I'm a big fan of Rod Serling's interest in appearance. He was one of the first people to look at the concept of plastic surgery. If we talk about the other episode later in the last season, number 12, Looks Just Like You, which is another episode that almost made my list, where it's essentially everybody is delineated into like three different types of people. Everybody looks the same, aside from three different body types. So he really enjoyed looking at the role aesthetics play in our lives. And I think he does it really, really greatly here. It tells the story of Janet Tyler, who is undergoing these treatments in an attempt to, quote, look normal. You don't know what her face looks like. She's hidden under these very heavy bandages. You know that this is her 11th treatment, which is the maximum number that is legally allowed in this society. She spends the whole episode covered in these huge bandages. You don't see anybody for the whole episode, whether it's the doctors or the nurses. Everybody's in shadow. And they're talking about how sad it is in case her face isn't fixed. She tries to convince the doctor that if they can't fix it, can she be put away? Can she be institutionalized because she doesn't want to look different? The doctor, as the episode progresses, becomes more questioning of the society and why she has to be judged on her outer beauty, and that's considered treasonous in the society. And so eventually they remove the bandages. It's not a spoiler per se. This episode is probably one of the more famous episodes, but you find out that she is beautiful and that her face is beautiful. And you find out that technically everybody is incredibly ugly. They have these thick eyebrows and these pig noses. They just look horrible. In this society, that's what everybody looks like. And people who are beautiful and normal looking are considered the outcasts. She runs around the hospital. She's eventually joined up with an incredibly good-looking man who takes her to a place that's considered an exile for her, quote, her own kind. And at the end of the episode, the guy keeps telling her to remember that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I love this episode. It's incredibly weird. It's this bizarre just amalgamation of dystopian society with, again, these really weird aesthetics about beauty and how we are so consumed with who defines what normal looks like. I'm very fascinated by it. It's a bit simplistic, I think, now, especially if you look at it from the concept of it's a very white, able-bodied depiction of beauty. I would love to know how race plays into this world, if anything. In the moment, it's a really great episode. The first reveal of the real people and what they look like is great. A lot of the best Rod Serling episodes are ones that could have easily transcended to radio. This is essentially an episode where, aside from the visual reveal at the end, it's told all through dubbed dialogue because you don't see anybody's lips move. Samantha, what do you think about this one?
I didn't even think about how race would play into this sort of society. That's a very interesting point. Another point, too, is, like you said, all of the vocals were dubbed, and I found it so interesting that we have one actress who does the voice of the leading lady the whole episode, and then when the bandages are removed, it's actually Donna Douglas.
Oh, that's right.
Plays
the face.
Jane. Right, the face.
She's the face, of course, and she's Tyler, gorgeous. Yeah.
Of course, she had fame in other areas, too. And I mean, it's a classic. There's not much more you can even say about that one. It's just a really refreshing take. It's one of those that I was so curious to see. It's one of those that I had heard about until I actually watched it in progression with the rest of the series.
Well, it's funny. They did a revival of The Twilight Zone in the early 2000s. They remade this episode. Supposedly it is more faithful to Rod Serling's script, but they changed the faces to look more ghoulish and gross, which I think you really lose something because you need something that looks passably human. And I think making people look decayed and zombie-like, you at least understand the benefit of making people look like weird pig people, because it's still passable for human. Why would anyone want to look like a zombie? I guess you could say, why would anyone want to look like a pig person? But I just think you lose something by trying to make it more gross.
Right. At least they're whole beings.
Yes, that is a great way to sum it.
It's hard to understand the reasoning behind wanting to look decayed. Scientifically, it doesn't make as much sense. So I understand what you're saying there.
Somebody's probably listening to this being like, I can't believe you guys are talking about the logistics of whether you'd want to look like a zombie or a pig person. I'm sorry. Samantha, what is your number one?
This was one, as soon as I got this quote-unquote assignment, I knew what would be my number one. It's called I Shot an Arrow Into the Air. It's season 1, episode 12. And it's about these three men who crash after launching into space on the Arrow. That's the name of the spaceship. And the story starts out as these three trying to survive on this unknown asteroid with limited water, but Corey, played by Dewey Martin, quickly becomes greedy, and he becomes willing to sabotage his own crewmates and do anything to prolong his own life. Honestly, Dewey Martin, as I mentioned, Keenan Wynn, he makes this episode. According to some reports, he passed away in April of this year. And I was very, very fortunate to write to him and tell him how much of a profound effect his performance had on me, and I got his autograph, which is pretty great. I'm very fortunate to have talked to him. It's just a phenomenal performance. It's really that, in addition to the incredible twist ending, that makes this my favorite episode of all time. You can see the mounting desperation on his face as the tension builds throughout the arc. And then you see the release of it, along with this insurmountable expression of guilt that he feels at the end. It's just magnificent. This is one of those episodes, I can't not spoil it. It's not super well known. I mean, when you compare it to some of the other episodes of season one, it is, but...
Technically, there are no spoilers for a series that is how many years old?
An interesting fact that I learned about this episode, Rod Serling was at a party when he was approached by a woman named Madeline Champion, who said, "What would happen if three guys landed on what they thought was an asteroid and it turned out to be the outside of Las Vegas?" He was so taken with this idea that he paid her $500 on the spot and gave her on-screen credit for the story idea. And it was the only suggestion like this that he ever turned into a script for the show. This same plot twist was also reused as the famous twist ending for the original Planet of the Apes. I actually watched this episode before I had seen Planet of the Apes, and I didn't know the ending when I originally watched it. And I think that made it so much more profound and interesting to me. If I had seen Planet of the Apes or something else like that first, it wouldn't have meant as much. The other thing that I really love about this episode is that Rod Serling was known for quoting literature and using these quotes to make inventive episode titles. And I just think this is one of the smartest titles that he ever thought of. It makes so much sense and it fits so well with the story.
I get this episode confused. There were so many episodes where it was exactly about other planets or going into space, ending up in the same place, the time space barrier. I get them confused, and I believe I've seen this one, but I could not tell you if I didn't have it confused with something else.
The main one that I was so upset I couldn't include into my list was "And When the Sky Was Opened," which I believe is season one, episode 8, maybe 10. I was so annoyed that I couldn't include it, but it's so similar. It's about these three spacemen, a similar sort of premise, but again, Rod Taylor is fantastic in that. That's my favorite acting performance of the show. But Dewey Martin is certainly up there. He never really became famous as an actor, but all you need to do is watch this episode and you can see the untapped potential, I think.
Well, my number one is as different from that as it gets. It's one of the, probably the most famous episode. I had to put it on here because I love it so. It's from season 5, episode 6. It is Living Doll. I love doll-based movies. I love and I hate them. I love the ones that are interesting and good. Like this, it, or the episode with, if anybody's seen Tiny Toon Adventures, when Elmira had that really mean doll that came to life and just berated her, like life-size, entertaining. Doll stories like this, where it's frightening, terrify me to no end. I want to say Treehouse of Horror from The Simpsons did an episode that's a parody of this. And it probably creeped me out too, because I probably saw that episode before I saw this one. Directed by Richard Serafin, written by Jerry Soule, but it's actually credited to longtime writer Charles Beaumont. Jerry Soule was a Twilight Zone writer. He was a ghostwriter for the series, but he had also put his name to stuff like Alfred Hitchcock Presents, The Outer Limits, Star Trek, the original series. He wrote books, wrote a lot of books, actually, but he did 3 episodes of The Twilight Zone under Charles Beaumont's name. Charles Beaumont was dying of an illness. People aren't really sure what it is. Could have possibly been early onset Alzheimer's, could have been Pick's disease, but he was dying. He was unable to write. And so Jerry Soule ghost wrote 3 episodes, The New Exhibit, Queen of the Nile, and this, and Charles Beaumont split the fees for the episodes with him. It's a bit of a sad downturn for an episode that is so iconic, but it's a great episode nonetheless. Telly Savalas, who plays a guy named Eric Streeter, who is married to a woman named Annabelle, played by Mary LaRoche, who I believe is the mom from Bye Bye Birdie. I want to say.
And she also played Mary, the mistress, in my number three choice, A World of His Own.
Oh, that's right. That's
I recognized
right, yeah.
that name as soon as you said it. I was like, wait, really?
Annabelle has a daughter named Christy, played by Tracy Stratford, who Eric hates because he claims because they can't have children of their own, he can't love her because she's not his. I'm just like, that logic makes no sense, guy. You just don't like kids. I just own that. It's Christy's birthday, and Annabelle buys her a talking Tina doll. The voice is June Foray from The Jetsons and a lot of other classic Saturday morning cartoons. Christy's very happy, and Eric, being him, decides that he's gonna like screw with the doll and mess with it. And it, eventually it goes from my name is Talkie Tina to my name is Talkie Tina, I don't like you. My name is Talkie Tina, I think I hate you. This doll just becomes very murderous to the point where Eric tries to throw it out. It comes back. He tries to put this in a circular saw. It doesn't work. He ties the doll to a burlap sack, weighing it with bricks. The doll comes back. It's not necessarily scary. I think it's a very comical episode. Because every time Eric tries to do something, the last second he just assumes, you know, maybe he'll just be nice to Christy. Talkie Tina says, my name is Talkie Tina, and I don't forgive you. I just love the one-liners that June Foray's character gives to him throughout. It's this increasing level of hostility between a man who's a horrible human being and a doll. It's just great. It's the best. And at the end of the episode, in the middle of the night, Eric wakes up, goes to investigate a mysterious noise. Tina is gone. And he goes down the stairs and trips over her. You know, 95% of accidents happen in the home. And he dies. He dies. And Annabelle goes and finds Eric's body, and the doll is there next to him. And Annabelle picks it up and she says, my name is Talkie Tina, and you'd better be nice to me. That's how it ends. Talkie Tina wins. I love it. This has a Bernard Herrmann score to it, too, by the way. The doll was actually a briquette doll. I don't know what briquette was, but apparently it was a doll that was a non-talking doll. But they got the inspiration from Chatty Cathy, obviously. And they put June Foray's voice over it, and I think it's brilliant. It's comical now, but I just love how Eric is a child, and isn't it great that a child's toy ends up beating him? I'm rooting for Tina at the end of it. The series had a lot of episodes, a couple episodes with puppets. All of them pale in comparison to this one. I love this episode. Samantha, what do you think about Talkie Tina?
I actually have to admit, this is the only one on your list that I have not seen. I haven't gotten that far.
Go rectify it. It's so good.
I need to, apparently. That sounds fantastic. I've wanted to see more of Telly Savalas' work, actually, and June Foray. That's the perfect motivation for me. No, that sounds fantastic. I've heard a lot about it. I've heard it mentioned as the favorite on everybody's list. I'm a completionist. I have to watch them in order. I'm somewhere in season four. But I have seen Queen of the Nile that you mentioned earlier because Anne Blythe is one of my favorite actresses.
Actually, we have time. So why don't we run through some honorable mentions, episodes that almost made it on the list. I'm looking at the episode list right now, so I'm just going
to... Oh gosh, I have to do that too then.
Yes, feel free. Some of the biggies, something like Time Enough at Last.
I love Burgess Meredith.
That episode is my life, because I would love to have unlimited time to just read everything, but you always have to be very careful of your glasses. Thankfully, though, polycarbonate lenses, haha, so they don't necessarily shatter like that anymore. It's such a great episode. It's an iconic one for a reason. The Hitchhiker is a great one,
right,
with Inger Stevens. One of the creepier death-based ones. Monsters are due on Maple Street.
I have a mention for that episode in the movie episode.
So yeah, we're going to be talking a lot about how the monsters are due on Maple Street almost ended up in the movie. Mm-hmm. The After Hours and Francis is fantastic in that one. That one almost made my list. I tried very hard to find a way to include it. I couldn't do it. Looking into season two, not a whole lot of episodes that I'm, like, super keen on. I will give my mom's favorite episode a shout-out, which is Will the Real Merchant Please Stand Up? That is her favorite, favorite episode of all of them.
Season 2 is the worst season. Ooh, it's a strong word because of the videotape episodes, the experimental videotaped episodes. Just the staging of them, it was essentially shot live because videotaping was in such an experimental stage that they couldn't cut the footage. So they would just use They would just use multiple cameras, and quality is so bad. And the thing is, I'm not even purist in that sense. I just, on top of the quality being so shoddy in those episodes, the content of them themselves is not great. A lot of them are very boring.
I'm looking at season 2 and just not a whole lot of episodes really jump out at me.
My favorite of season 2 would undoubtedly be Nick of Time with William Shatner.
Yeah.
I'm one of those few people. I like that episode better than Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. I really do. I think he's fantastic. Ooh,
That's some high praise.
Strong words.
It's a Richard Matheson written episode too. We're going to talk more about Nightmare 20,000 Feet too when we talk about the movie. It's different. I will say The Invaders is also an interesting episode. That's the one with Agnes Moorehead.
I can say so much about her in this.
It loses something at the end when you finally figure out what it is. So, I mean, it's Agnes Moorehead, so you can't really give it too much guff. As far as season 3, It's a Good Life, which we're going to be talking about when we talk about the movie. The Midnight Sun is one that my mom won't watch because it makes her sweaty, because it's supposed to.
My favorite season would be season 1, but my second choice would be season 3. I think there are a lot of gems in season 3.
Season 3 has Little Girl Lost, which essentially is what they based Poltergeist on.
Mm-hmm.
Which we're going to talk about Spielberg, too. The season that I think is the worst is season 4. That's the one where they switched to hour-long episodes.
Right.
It was a mid-season replacement. This was a mid-season replacement for a show called Fair Exchange. They had to fill the time slot because Fair Exchange did not happen, and so they had to lengthen the episodes to an hour. And I feel that an hour is a lot for these episodes.
It is way too much of a commitment, especially if you don't like the plot in the first place. Like, if you're binging on these like you would nowadays, because it is on Hulu and Netflix, you could watch these episodes, you know, bang, bang, bang with each one. And if you don't like it, you know, oh, that's 20 minutes of your life wasted. It's not a big deal. I think that's the reason why I had to stop watching in order, because they're boring.
1 year, Sci-Fi did try to do a marathon just of the hour episodes, and it was like 4 episodes, and that was it.
Yeah.
It takes up way too much time. The last season, I would say, is probably my favorite.
Really?
Because there are so many classics. Season 5, Nightmare 20,000 Feet, A Kind of Stopwatch, Living Doll, Ring-a-Ding Girl with Maggie McNamara in there, Number 12 Looks Just Like You, Night Call, Ida Lupino's The Masks, Mr. Garrity and the Graves. I will say the series finale is a terrible, terrible episode. They were just done by that point. They had to dub everybody's voice because I believe there was airplanes going over what they were doing, and essentially they had no audio. So June Foray does everybody's dialogue, and it's a horrid, horrid episode.
Oh, no, I'd really like to. One actor, really, that I really have to mention if we're talking Twilight Zone is Jack Klugman. Hands down, one of my favorite supporting actors in classic film. 12 Angry Men.
Days of Wine and Roses is what I think Jack Klugman.
Absolutely. I love him on this show in general. I believe he ties for the most number of episodes. 4. 4 to him and 4 to Burgess Meredith. A Game of Pool would be my favorite with him. Not to spoil all of his episodes, I actually read the spoilers for one of his episodes that spoiled me for the rest. All 4 of his appearances, his character dies. And I think I found that really interesting.
If we're talking MVP actors, I will throw out Cliff Robertson. I have an unholy crush on Cliff Robertson because I saw Gidget and I thought he was amazing and I love him. He did 2 episodes of The Twilight Zone and I completely forgot the first one because it comes in season 2. 100 Yards Over the Rim was the first one that he did.
Oh, right. The only way that I know him or know that episode is because John Astin is in it.
That's right. John Astin is in it. It's the end of season 2. A family in the 1800s that are going to California, and he goes over the rim of this hill and ends up in 1961 New Mexico. I want to say it's what they stole the village from, but I don't believe it's the same story. Season 3, he did The Dummy.
Right, that's a fantastic
episode. Which is a great, great one, where he's a ventriloquist. His dummy essentially started to dictate the rules of what they're going to do. It's not to be confused with Caesar and Me, which is a similar episode with Jackie Cooper, who also is a ventriloquist. Those two are really fun. Any honorable mentions, ones we didn't touch on, you want to shill for?
I'm a huge season 1 fan. Episode 1, the very first, the pilot, Where Is Everybody?
Yeah.
Great, with Earl Holloman, who's still with us. That's the perfect setup for what the series was going to be. This normal man in isolation, this slight change of scenery of surroundings can make you crazy. And I think a lot of the episodes had that sort of a theme. My very first favorite episode, the first one that I saw that I was like, this is my favorite, was Walking Distance with Gig Young. He had a really tragic life, which is ironic because the episode is about him revisiting his childhood home and meeting himself as a child and looking back on these happy times when this adult man is going through some hardship in his own life in the present. And that's just another one I always love to go back to. Season 1 is just my favorite. You could encapsulate it and bottle it up, and that's a perfect series right there. But there are so many throughout the show that I love.
Samantha, you're actually going to read us a couple listener answers that we had thrown out on Twitter, people who wanted to share their favorite episodes. We got a couple responses, and you have them handy. So why don't you read us what came in and who they're from?
Absolutely. We have Cody Robison. I hope I'm reading that right. He said, I think the effectiveness of the episode often correlates with my anxieties. So for me, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet was traumatizing. I didn't fly till I was 24. I've done it several times since, but I always keep the shutter in the closed position. And as we'll discuss in the movie episode, I think that one is very well timed. It's a perfect setup, especially when flight was still sort of in its infancy as far as commercial airlines.
I laugh at every movie that shows early air travel because I'm just like, why would you do this?
Right, you see everyone smoking.
It's a metal tube, but it looks like steel. You can see the rivets where they literally like stapled the plane together. Cody also threw out Nothing in the Dark. He said, it really helped me work through losing my grandmother. Also, peak hunk era Robert Redford. And One for the Angels, I think is the one he's referencing, is another episode in the Death is Pretty Alright Dude subcategory of episodes. We also got another comment from at Quincy Hughes, whose Twitter handle is BojackHumanMan. Just one impossible. One I think is underappreciated is A Most Unusual Camera, a rare Twilight Zone comedy episode that hits more than it misses. Great casting. Fred Clark is perfect here. And a story that really does fit the Twilight Zone style, marred only by a rushed and confusing denouement. For the record, this is one of my favorite shows of all time. Most Unusual Camera is a fun one. I like that one as well. Thank you guys for sending in responses. If you didn't get your response in via Twitter, you can email it to us at ticklishbiz@gmail.com and we'll read them on the next episode. Samantha, we're going to go over and talk about the movie, but where can fans find and get in touch with you?
I've recently finally joined the Twitterverse. I'm at a long time coming and I'm at Classic Film Geek there. And you can also find my main blog on musingsofaclassicfilmaddict.wordpress.com, and I'm on Tumblr at annsblythe.tumblr.com.
Keep an eye out if you want to learn more about the 1983 Twilight Zone, the movie. We're going to be doing a bonus episode. Again, it's not going to be a Patreon exclusive. It's just going to be available for you all to listen to. If you want to listen to that, it's going to be available on Podbean and all the other places But if you don't want to listen to that episode because it's not classic era or all of that, then we totally understand, and we will be back next week.
So before we close out this edition of Ticklish Business, I just wanted to give a bit of a shout out to the folks at Filmstruck, the TCM co-created streaming service that they had with the Criterion Collection, Warner, and all the other fantastic studios. If you have not heard, they are going to be closing up shop on November 29th because a lot of corporate interests that just make me very sad to be a classic film fan. But I do know the fine folks that created Filmstruck, that nurtured it, the amazing people at TCM. So I just wanted to send them all my best. And hopefully you guys are able to cushion the blow of losing such an indelible service that helped so many of us indulge our classic film passions. Part of why I feel the need to keep this show going so much is because we do need classic film. And a lot of what prevents us from enjoying it is access, and I hope to do my part as much as I can to get people to watch movies made before 1970. So it's very sad to hear that a site like Filmstruck is closing up, but you have until November 29th. Definitely check out as many of those movies as you can. Feel free to send me a tweet or an email or whatever if you want some recommendation stuff that you should prioritize over the other. I know Eddie Miller has been posting some stuff that you should be giving some time to, so definitely check it out. It's a great site, and I'm very sad to see it close. But that's going to close out this edition of Ticklish Business. As always, you can listen to Ticklish Business a variety of different ways, either directly at ticklishbusiness.podbean.com, Stitcher Radio, Player FM, Spotify. I actually don't know if we're on Spotify. I got told we were, but I haven't actually checked whether that's true. If you are listening via Spotify, let me know. Or on iTunes. If you are listening via iTunes, please consider helping the podcast out by leaving a rating and review. As always, you can contact me directly at ticklishbiz, that's B-I-Z at gmail.com, or visit me at my classic film site, journeysinclassicfilm.com. If you stop by there, I have some Halloween esque reviews you can check out, stuff from the latest from Kino and some other places. So if you want to know what discs are worth buying to support classic film, definitely give my website a look. The podcast is also on Twitter at ticklish_biz. If you want to learn more about upcoming episodes or hear exclusive content before anyone else, then consider supporting Ticklish Business via Patreon. I have a wealth of amazing perks. All your donations go right back into making Ticklish Business the premier classic film podcast that it is. And I'm actually going to be downsizing some of the perks. Right now I have a lot of different tiers, so I want to give you more bang for your buck. So if you have not become a patron, definitely check it out in the coming days as I streamline things. If you are a patron already, you're going to be getting more for your dollars. So definitely keep an eye out for that. I'm also going to try to be more interactive there and let you guys know what we're planning, Samantha, Andrea, and I, and all the different things you can get for supporting us. If you do become a patron right now, you can listen to my two new supplementary shows. I actually just put out an episode over the weekend. Co-host William Bibbiani and I look at how Hollywood talks about itself in cinema with the show Based on a True Podcast. Our latest episode is in honor of Halloween, and we talk about that time when Nosferatu was actually a snuff film and Max Schreck was really a vampire. Not really. We're talking about the 2000 film Shadow of the Vampire and how that movie plays fast and loose with history, but we still enjoy it. And by the time this podcast goes up, I think it should be out. If not, it will be out very soon. If you listen to Doubled Features, that's the show where Adam Kautzer and I talk about the features Hollywood films again and again. I promise my episode looking at all three iterations of The Bad Seed will be coming out soon. You can also check out previous interviews I have with author Alan K. Rohde and TCM tour guide Sarah Louise Lilly. I'm going to be trying to get Drea and Samantha on a couple bonus episodes to get some more things out there for you, just to mix it up. So if you're interested in becoming a patron, head over to patreon.com/ticklishbiz. And if you want to learn more about the Centennial Celebration series that I've been doing this year, you need to go over and become, hopefully if you are a member of TCM's backlot, you should be. If you aren't, you should consider it. You can read my year-long series about the stars spotlighted on the show. I talk about films and share information that you won't hear on the podcast. Next time, I actually don't know what we're doing. We had plans to do another Halloween show, and then life just got in the way, so we're going to be starting fresh in November with some movies, and I'm going to keep it a surprise.
Because every time I announce something, something goes wrong. And then it never happens. And then I feel like an idiot for telling you about it. So I'm actually going to keep this a surprise. And that'll entice you to come back. So hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. And until next time.